listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 76. This minute begins with David still listening to the sleeping engineer's heartbeat, and ends with Vickers charging out of the ship with a flamethrower at the ready. As David listens, he gives his creepiest smile. I'm not sure if this is just the angle or the lighting or what, but he actually looks artificial. We cut back to the rest of the crew returning to the ATV. Chance asks Yannick if there's a possibility that they've all been infected with a virus while they had their helmets off. While their scans determined that the air was breathable in terms of chemical composition, they weren't checking for pathogens. This is what a lot of critics focused on with the helmet removal scene. But would that be a concern in real life? On Earth, viruses tend to stick to one or a few species. Cross-species transmission is rare because the immune systems of living beings are so varied. The most notable example of a cross-species virus would be, of course, rabies. But there's also swine flu, bird flu, and even HIV. There is more likelihood of transmission if the species are closely related. For example, if they are all mammals. Or if they're in frequent contact with one another, in the case of avian flu coming from chickens. Animals can also infect us in other ways, with viruses they carry but aren't susceptible to. For example, toxoplasmosis can be contracted from cat feces, but it doesn't make the cat sick. And pretty much all reptiles naturally have salmonella in their digestive tracts. Actually, even a bite from another human being can make us sick, even if the individual wasn't sick with anything themselves. Now, ignoring the mutagen, would astronauts in a situation like this have much to worry about? Surprisingly, the field of astrovirology is barely studied right now. There's only really a push for it last year, when a paper was published discussing the importance of studying astrovirology. We don't really know what the risk would be in exposing ourselves to an alien planet. So far, our greatest concern has been the lack of breathable atmosphere, high radiation, and other toxins in the environment. At this stage, we haven't even found proof of any kind of unicellular life outside of our own planet. We simply do not know what would happen. It is possible that we are so different from one another that transmission isn't possible, but it's also theorized that human beings might cause more harm to another planet's ecosystem than any harm it would cause to us. What happens if we were to dump a septic tank on Martian soil? Are we going to inadvertently create new life? Or wipe out what microbial life was already there? We do not know. There is a podcast called Offworld, part of Adam Savage's Tested Network. They interviewed an astrobiologist, and she discusses the possibilities and protocols in a situation similar to Prometheus. Actually, they were using the movie Life as an example, but essentially they explored what would happen if we were to ever encounter alien life of any kind. I've already discussed the helmet removal scene at length, and my conclusion in those minutes was basically that, no. Of course, this would be reckless and stupid in real life, but within a movie, this tends not to even be commented upon, and it's strange that Prometheus was targeted more than any other film where space travelers opt to not use helmets. It's like being annoyed that in movies where aliens or just two foreign cultures meet each other, they're somehow able to communicate, they just learn each other's language really quickly. It's just, yeah, it's a trope. It's just for the convenience of moving the plot along. It's not a big deal. I think if anything, they would have to be more cautious in an environment with a breathable atmosphere. If you can survive in it, what else can? There's a lot of moisture in this pyramid, anything could be living in there. And they have already encountered worms in the soil in a deleted scene. So they know at the very least that there is some kind of life currently living there. And animals are a major vector for disease. Generally, you don't pick up viruses from an environment. They tend to need a host. Water also works. They can breed in water. That's a perfectly safe environment for a lot of unicellular life. But generally speaking, transmission either has to come from water or an animal. It's not just, oh, I was walking through the desert and now I have some sand disease. No, it doesn't work that way. In this deleted scene, Milburn also mentions that humans have encountered microbial life before, so they should know better by now. And all that said, maybe they do know better than us. Maybe they know how alien viruses work. That's why they were only scanning for a breathable atmosphere. Maybe cross-contamination isn't possible, especially when exposure is limited. Maybe it takes months or years for a virus to adapt to our immune system. which is the case with cross-species contamination on Earth, it's generally not an instantaneous thing, especially if the species are very different from one another. I have to wonder, how many planets would we have to encounter with life on it to know for sure how life works across the universe? Because it goes either one of two ways, that life evolves pretty much the same way on every planet. We start off as these single-celled organisms, and then we build from there, and life becomes more and more complicated, and we see somewhat familiar structures every single time. Or is it something so completely alien that there's just no overlap, that you've got, I don't know, silicon-based life forms, or they're not even operating in the same dimensions we do, or who knows? But, you know, even if you've encountered 2, 3, 4, 5 planets with life on it, you couldn't make any sort of absolute decisions because space is infinite. So there are infinite possibilities. So no matter what, it would always be a case of, well, we know how viruses work on these 5 planets, and those are the only 5 planets we've discovered with life on it. That is all there is to know about astrovirology or xenoviruses, but there's always the chance, there's always the possibility of something going wrong, which is what happens in Prometheus. So at this stage, it's hard to say anything definitively, but let's just say pathogens aren't the concern. There are still untold elements in an environment that are deadly to human beings, and that's only considering the ones we know about. No one anticipated the mutagen, or later, the airborne pathogen. Basically, it's unlikely real astronauts are going to be removing their helmets on an alien planet anytime soon. There are just too many unknown risks and variables, and that's not even including the murderous android you brought with you. Then again, everyone ended up being perfectly safe wandering around the pyramid without helmets on. This shows us that there were no airborne pathogens or contaminants of any kind. And this makes sense, that the engineers require an identical environment to our own to survive. The pyramids and ships appear to have some kind of inbuilt air purifier. There were no insects or animals to act as disease vectors. The worms were handled safely with gloves. So really, they were acting fairly sensibly until, you know, the plot required them to not be. As a crew races back to the Prometheus and Charlie lays in Shaw's arms screaming in agony, it's interesting that now everyone decides that keeping their helmets on is a good idea. Also, props to LMG, he's really going for it with the hurt acting. Holloway tells Shaw it's too late for him. He's starting to accept his fate. Actually, this is the first time he's admitted he's sick. He's been saying he's fine until now. There's no middle ground with this guy. I'm fine. No, sorry, I was mistaken. I am in fact dying. What I would have liked in later minutes is for the characters to discuss infection more in greater detail. Have a few lines like, what could have killed him? Xenoviruses or astroviruses or whatever can't infect human beings, especially not at this rate. We've only been here a couple of days. Now, I think a small addition like this could have gone a long way to help justify actions taken in the film. It forever amazes me that these kind of problems make it into the final shooting script, and it happens on so many movies. This kind of addition also helps to make things even scarier. They weren't idiots stumbling into danger, they knew what they were doing, they took every precaution, and yet still, something managed to harm them. That's what made the xenomorph scary. Mankind's hubris in believing they knew everything and could anticipate and overcome any problems. But the very presence of a xenomorph is a death sentence. It's not a question of if, but when. The minute ends with Yannick demanding the airlock doors be opened, and Vickers tells them not to open it. And here we are setting up a scene to parallel the one in Alien, where Ash let Kane back inside the Nostromo. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.